Even in the cave, where the crackling fire sent grey fingers of smoke up to the hole in the stony roof, and red light played across the wall carvings of twining serpents and tusked, staring-eyed beasts, the cold still gnawed at Simon's bones. As he floated in and out of fevered sleep, through curtained daylight and chill night, he felt as though grey ice grew inside him, stiffening his limbs and filling him with frost. He wondered if he would ever be warm again. Fleeing the chill Yikanuk cave and his sickened body, he wandered the road of dreams, slipping helplessly from one fantasy to the next. Many times he thought he had returned to the Hayholt, to his castle home as it once had been, but would never be again. A place of sun-warmed lawns, of shadowed nooks and hiding holes, the greatest house of all, full of bustle and colour and music. He walked again in the hedge garden, and the wind that sang outside the cave in which he slept sang in his dreams as well, blowing gently through the leaves and shaking the delicate hedges. In one strange dream he seemed to travel back to Dr. Morgani's chamber. The doctor's study was now at the top of a tall tower, with clouds swimming past the high arched windows. The old man hovered fretfully over a large open book. There was something frightening about the doctor's single-mindedness and silence. Simon did not seem to exist at all for Morgani's. Instead, the old man stared intently at the crude drawing of three swords that stretched across the splayed pages. Simon moved to the windowsill. The wind sighed, though he could feel no breeze. He looked down to the courtyard below. Staring up at him with wide, solemn eyes was a child, a small, dark-haired girl. She lifted a hand in the air as if in greeting, then suddenly was gone. The tower and Morgani's cluttered chamber began to melt away beneath Simon's feet like a receding tide. Last to vanish was the old man himself. Even as he slowly faded, like a shadow in growing light, Morgani still did not lift his eyes to Simon's. Instead, his gnarled hands busily traced the pages of his book, as though restlessly looking for answers. Simon called out to him, but all the world had turned grey and cold, full of swirling mists and the tatters of other dreams. He awakened, as he had so many times since Urmsheim, to find the cave night-darkened, and to see Hasten and Jeriki bedded down near the rune-scrawled stone wall. The Erkinlander was curled sleeping in his cloak, beard on breastbone. The Sither stared at something cupped in the palm of his long-fingered hand. Jeriki seemed deeply absorbed. His eyes gleamed faintly, as though whatever he held reflected the last embers of the fire. Simon tried to say something. He was hungry for warmth and voices, but sleep was tugging at him again. "The wind is so loud," it moaned in the mountain passes outside, as it did around the tower tops of the Hayholt, as it had across the battlements of Naglamund. "So sad. The wind is sad." Soon he was asleep once more. The cave was quiet but for faint breathing and the lonely music of high places.